Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you, your family, your friends, you're all staying strong, you're all staying healthy right now, and you are now about halfway through another week. And why is it that now that football is here, the weeks are just flying by? Because remember those last few weeks of like July and early August? Why did they feel like they took about 6 months? And then football season starts, and we are already in October. And just like we see every single year, we are getting surprises. We are getting some crazy things happening. Let's jump in this week in the world of college football, where we started off the week right off the bat. Friday night, number 10 Utah was upset by number 19 Oregon State. Hey, I picked Utah to win the Pac-12 this year. They had better rally after that loss, because that did not help their cause at all. The number 1 Georgia Bulldogs had to rally to get past a very average Auburn team. Didn't really see that coming. And Georgia tight end Brock Bowers, he seriously took the game over by himself. Now, there's no way a tight end could win the Heisman, right? Because dude had 8 catches for 157 yards, and he scored the game-winning touchdown. I don't know. He's making a pretty solid case for the Heisman. Speaking of the Heisman, last year's winner, USC quarterback Caleb Williams, torched the University of Colorado for 6 touchdowns on Saturday. Meanwhile, USC's defense, it looks really problematic. They allowed Colorado to close the lead to 7 points as the game expired. USC wins 48-41. Having said that, that game did not feel like a one-score game. I know Colorado scored at the very end, even though it kind of seemed like they were stalling to score at the very end. Not sure what was going on there, but that didn't feel like a one-score game. Number 20, Ole Miss, upset number 13, LSU. That gives the Tigers their second loss on the year, and that most likely ends their chances of making the college football playoff. But then things got a little more weird, because the game ended and the Ole Miss fans stormed the field. Now again, I understand college kids are excited, but when I see a fan base storm the field, the first thing I think of is that you didn't think there was any way you would win that game, and then you won that game. You were number 20. You were playing number 13 at your place. Come on, Oxford. You're better than that. You're in the SEC. You have Lane Kiffin. I mean, you go to bowl games almost every year. Act like you've been there before, Ole Miss. You're not Colorado. Meanwhile, another week in the NFL, and that league, I swear at this point, I know it's just barely October, that league is already drunk. I don't know what's going on in the NFL. I don't even understand what I'm watching every week. The Detroit Lions went into Lambeau Field and smacked the Green Bay Packers about the face, chest, breast, neck, and head. You know, if I didn't know better, I might think that Jordan Love isn't destined for the Hall of Fame like his predecessors. Fortunately, I've been told that he is. Remember when we were being told the Packers are actually going to be better without Aaron Rodgers? Yeah. How's that going? After scoring 70 points on my beloved Broncos and basically declaring themselves Super Bowl champions, the Miami Dolphins crashed back to earth on Sunday. They gave up 50 to the Buffalo Bills and got smoked. Of course, I guess that means that the Bills are probably going to score 120 points on Denver in a few weeks. That should be fun. The Tennessee Titans blew out the Cincinnati Bengals. And the Bengals, they seem to be in some legit trouble. You know, we keep waiting for the Bengals to kind of get going, but Joe Burrow is banged up. and that line can't protect him. And I just don't understand how they're going to get going, because that is a key factor. The quarterback, that guy. Eventually that defense wears out. Running back isn't doing as much. I don't know. We might be waiting all season for the Bengals to get going. Don't like the way their season has started off. The Pittsburgh Steelers lost quarterback Kenny Pickett to a knee injury, although it doesn't sound like it's going to be that serious. And then his backup, Mitch Trubisky, reminded us all why he is a backup and couldn't get a starting job. The Houston Texans blew the Steelers out 30-6. Who saw that coming? Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud looked like he was back at Ohio State. He was doing whatever he wanted. Steelers, that's not how Ohio State quarterbacks work in the NFL. Not sure if you didn't get the memo or what was going on there, but they lit the Steelers up. Finally, my Denver Broncos fell behind 28-7 to the winless Chicago Bears. The Bears, of course, were trying to break that losing streak of 13 straight games. And I'm going to be honest, everything early was working for the Bears. The Broncos were dead in the water. The offense was barely getting the ball when they did go 3-and-out. The defense couldn't stop anything. I mean, quarterback Justin Fields had that Bears offense rolling up and down the field all they wanted. I was actually on my way to Dove Valley with both a torch and a pitchfork. But then the Bears, well, they went all Bears on us. They allowed the Broncos to score 24 straight points and steal a 31-28 win on the road. So the Bears' losing streak now advances to 14. Hey, you're getting up into that top five area. Bears are sitting about 7th or 8th as far as all-time losing streaks. Meanwhile, my Broncos screwed up their chances of drafting Caleb Williams, because they were sitting at the top pick going into that game against Chicago. We saw what Caleb did when he was in Colorado this last week. Looked pretty good. Although, at this point, when you think about it, you've got the Bears with the top two picks in the draft. Then you've got the Raiders. You've got the Broncos. They're all kind of lurking in the top of that draft order for this spring's draft. Hey, if I'm Caleb Williams, I might be considering going back to school and trying to win a third Heisman Trophy next year. I don't know if I want to go to any of those teams. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com each week. We have new articles going up. In fact, if you did stop by, I talked about just how confusing that Bronco win was for Broncos country this past week. Very, very odd. Not even sure how to cheer anymore. But we do also post links to the podcast over there. We have links to the YouTube video. And yes, we have links to the Daily Dose gear. Maybe you need a t-shirt, need a sweatshirt, you need a hoodie. You can get whatever color you want. Whatever you need is over at DailyDoseSports.com. Make sure you're checking in there every week. Hey, today on the show, I am telling you right now, I have a guest that I can't wait to talk to. This is someone who has inside knowledge of a number of different sports. He has been around some big-time teams. He has been around some big-time athletes. He has been around some big-time coaches. He works with them consistently all the time. Trust me, you do not want to go anywhere. You've got to stick around and check out this interview. In fact, we have so much to get to. Today, let's get over to our interview with Dr. Matthew Preventure. Joining us this week on the Daily Dose, we have a very special guest that I am really looking forward to speaking with, because Dr. Matthew Preventure is one of the nation's leading orthopedic surgeons specializing in the surgical treatment and rehab of injuries to the knee and shoulder. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Dr. Preventure practices at the Stedman Clinic in Vail, Colorado. He conducts research as a principal investigator at the renowned Stedman Philippon Research Institute, aimed at innovation and improvement in patient care, again, in that field of orthopedic sports medicine. In 2012, he took on the position of chief of sports surgery at Massachusetts General, visiting professor of Harvard Medical School, and medical director and head team physician for the New England Patriots football team. He was the medical director and head team physician of those Patriots during that 2014 Super Bowl title season. And he pioneered a wellness and injury prevention program for the team. He also serves as a second opinion orthopedist for the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NHL. In addition to all this, he also acted as an assistant team physician for the Boston Red Sox and the Boston Bruins. He was recently named as chief injury and performance analyst for Fox Sports, where he and his team now provide injury and performance insights in the realm of professional and collegiate sports. He continues his duties, by the way, in the Navy. Yeah, he was in the Navy as a reservist and was most recently assigned to Navy SEAL Team 17 in Coronado, California. Dr. Preventure resides, like I said, up in Edwards, Colorado with his wife and four children. And I'm telling you right now, I am looking forward to talking to him. Dr. Matt Preventure, welcome to The Daily Dose. We appreciate you joining us today.
Wow, Clint, that's way too much, but it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
You have quite this background. You've gone through the military. You've gone into this amazing profession and excelled at it. Where did you grow up? How did you kind of get going in this line of work?
You know, it's amazing. I would describe it as mentors. We all have mentors throughout our lives. And I got introduced to sports medicine even as a young kid. I grew up in a very small town in New Hampshire. It's very classic. We had one general store. The general store was a post office. We didn't have a stoplight. And it was just great. We grew up in the woods and we were outside. We were doing sports all the time. And then we had the opportunity when I applied and got into the Naval Academy, went down there. And that's where I kind of got introduced to sports medicine, Clint, at the end of the day. And then I was rowing with the Naval Academy rowing team and had a few injuries and came across a great orthopedic surgeon and also some sports medicine professionals, physical therapists, athletic trainers that helped take care of our team and helped take care of us. And I was hooked.
Besides rowing, were there other sports that you participated in? Were there team sports you participated in growing up? What was kind of your athletic background?
Yeah, we sort of did it all, you know, all the team sports growing up, basketball, baseball. I mean, we were a small school in New Hampshire, so certainly not going to be competitive on any Division One level, throughout the United States with these big schools. But one thing we did do is, you know, some unique sports, and rowing was certainly one of them. And, you know, it's a great sport, and some even call it, and not to be too much about it, but the ultimate team sport, and you're in complete synchronicity, and the oars are going in, and just the training and full-year commitment that it required was amazing. I loved it. I loved rowing with the Navy. I had the opportunity to row a little bit with the U.S. team for the next few years after college. And that was a great opportunity as well to really see that world caliber level. And believe me, I wasn't really one of them, but the world caliber level of the Europeans, Australians, New Zealand rowers. And that's really, really got my sports medicine introduction.
It's interesting that you say that, because in coaching basketball, there were every once in a while, I'd get a rowing coach come around and say, "Hey, you have those long, lean athletes. If they ever want to come over to rowing,
totally,
you just point them my direction." So yeah, it's kind of funny that you say that. Now I got to ask it, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. How did you end up in Colorado? Was it the clinic up there? What brought you to Colorado, to my home state?
Yeah, you know, it was absolutely the clinic. So I did most of my time in Coronado, California, as a Navy orthopedic surgeon, active duty, and also stayed reserves after a long active duty career in the Navy. I did go to Mass General for about for almost 4 years, where I was the head of sports medicine there. And then an opportunity came out at the Stebbins Clinic in Vail, Colorado, and decided to pursue it. So very lucky to be here. It's a great spot, and taking care of athletes of all ages is amazing and what we love to do.
Well, and you do see some incredible athletes. People from all over the world come to that clinic, don't they?
Well, we're very lucky to have an incredible group of patients from our local clientele and our locals and people in Denver and everywhere else that just love to get back to their sport, their activity. You know, we want to make your lifestyle and your life better, and that's what we love doing. And then we also take care of a lot of professional athletes. I still take care of a lot of military, VA, veterans, retired, field team guys, a lot of fun patients that we take care of.
Sure. I got to ask, you end up being, that team physician for the New England Patriots. You're around that team that goes and wins a Super Bowl. I got to ask, how is Bill Belichick? What's he really like? Did you get to have any of that interaction with him?
Yeah. Oh, all the time. And Bill's an amazing guy. I'm convinced he has a photographic memory. He's brilliant. He's a very talented leader and is obviously an incredible student, teacher, guru of the game. And we did a lot of cool stuff together. We would, you know, it's not like it's press conferences where it's kind of like the 3 second, 5 second answers. We would meet for an hour, 2, 3 hours at a time and go over what would give us what I call the competitive medical advantage. And it was a really cool concept on what we had coined to be able to help our Navy SEALs when I was in the military perform better when we set up the tactical athlete program, which is really a human performance program aimed at tackling all aspects. You know, I'm an orthopedic surgeon, but a lot of things don't need surgery. And we just need to optimize the human performance paradigm and bring all these great professionals around. That's what I loved leading and building was a great team of professionals to care for athletes of all ages, all levels, not to mention the SEAL teams, the Patriots, and many of the other professional teams. And so Bill was all over that in terms of making that happen. And another interesting thing, Clint, is the Naval Academy connection was amazing. His dad actually coached my dad there. My dad went to the Naval Academy.
And okay.
So Steve Belichick wrote kind of a book on scouting, if you will.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately passed. But, Bill was down there in Annapolis, too. We grew up playing lacrosse. And we had a great Navy connection. He has a great affinity for the Naval Academy and the Navy. So we continue to this day have a great relationship. And I just saw him last week.
Okay. You know, in that line of work that you're dealing with, what is harder, getting guys to go back out there after the injury or getting them to stop playing to begin with? I would imagine you're dealing with both.
It's both. But I'll tell you, it's usually – number one, figuring out that they shouldn't go back and play in that same game. They do a great job of trying to hide the injury. That's why covering an NFL football game as a head doc and with my athletic trainer and all the great professionals and 60-plus people and medicine we have on that NFL field at any given time, we're looking for that injury, and they're very good about hiding it. The next thing is after injury and after recovery, and whatever, we also want to make sure that they are really ready to go back to play. And we put data and stats on that. We used a lot of analytics. And that was a big part of the thing I really wanted to try to do is really bring a data-driven approach about when you can truly return to play and using a lot of metrics and tests and other things to make sure you didn't get another injury because, being out again of an NFL game was a ton. But I'll tell you, coming back to the simple answer is, it's really hard to keep them down. They want to go back and play. They love the game.
Sure. And that's what makes them, the great, athletes that they are. And at the same time, you're in that business of trying to go, okay, wait a second. What's really going on here? And are you truly capable of even going back in there? And I want to get to a number of things, but I wanted to ask you, already in the NFL this year, and I know you're well-versed in the National Football League, in week one, we saw absolute disaster strike for the New York Jets. They had signed their best quarterback since Joe Willie, but Aaron Rodgers went down with that blown Achilles. When you looked at that, did you look at it and think, that's an age thing, that's a turf thing, that's just the unlucky kind of thing? What did you think when you saw that injury?
Well, first of all, I felt terrible for Aaron.
Yes.
I mean, he worked so hard to get there. This was, for the New York Jets fans and everything, my heart goes out to everyone, and especially Aaron and his teammates, because it's a devastating injury. It's really hard. When you look at the video, it's definitely something that's no question a tough injury, right?
Yeah.
And, he's a veteran. If he can walk off the field, he's going to walk off the field. If he can't, he needs a cart or needs a cart from the tent. We know we have an issue. So I feel really badly for him. My 39, the other sport, we see that a huge resurgence of Achilles injuries. Guess what? Pickleball and other things.
Oh, wow.
You look at the age group and demographic.
Now that does make sense though.
Yeah. So, I think, injuries are a huge part of the game. And, we follow this and analyze this at a company called The Predictors. And it's been a big part of what we do in terms of how we use analytics to optimize play to get players back, to know how they're going to come back, what they look like. And it's been a really good journey, but it was born out of what we did with the Navy SEAL team folks in building that tactical athlete program.
So how do you compare those two things? You've got Navy SEALs doing absolutely insane things. You've got these professional athletes doing also insane things. That's got to be a lot, I guess, a lot more similar than I would have ever thought about.
Yeah, totally is. Clint, I get asked that a lot. You know, what's the comparison between, you know, Navy SEAL team individual and professional athlete? I mean, they're really one of the same. You know, they're focused, they're driven, they've got resilience, and they're focused on a mission and a job. And it's just a matter of, you know, what their bodies have to do. You know, the team guys get pretty beat up, just like you do in football. And I could, you know, we actually even started what we called the banged up score or the bust with NFL, but I also applied it to, you know, our SEAL team guys got banged up, and they were, you know, they were certainly banged up because, you know, our country asked them to do a heck of a lot and go out on deployment after deployment after deployment, or go out and play football game after football game, or professional hockey game, professional baseball game, again and again and again. And it's a lot. It takes its toll on the body.
You know, we also saw in week one, we saw that Cleveland Browns injury with running back Nick Chubb, where he had the horrible knee injury, but that game was on natural grass. Some of these injuries, they just can't be avoided, can they? You've got these giant bodies colliding with each other, people stacked up. Some of these, you just can't legislate out of the game, can you?
No, you can't at all, Clint, exactly. Some are contact, and some may be a little bit turf-related. We have a lot of data that shows that there are certain injuries that turf is not the best for certain injuries, and certain types of ankles, certain type of knee injuries, even some hip injuries and calf strains, for example. And we scrutinized our data after Aaron Rodgers, and what's interesting is the incident or how many Achilles occurred on turf versus grass was the same. So
really,
pretty interesting. And that's probably just because of the mechanism. It's a dorsiflexion of the ankle goes into that position, it's like a squat position, and the calf lengthens. And sometimes it's a pull, and you're getting pulled down at the same time. So,
okay, so we are back with Dr. Matthew Preventure, who, after a career that included being the New England Patriots team doctor during their Super Bowl season in 2014. Was recently named as chief and performance analyst at Fox Sports, where he and his team provide injury and performance insights into the realm of both professional and collegiate sports. We were speaking about the injuries that we've already seen in the NFL this year to both Aaron Rodgers and to Nick Chubb. And this last week, we also saw that injury to Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Kenny Pickett. But you know, we have seen these injuries take place on both synthetic fields and on natural grass. So I want to talk to you about those injuries. And I guess my question to you is, some of the teams in the NFL seem to be incapable of keeping a natural grass surface year round. Would playing on like what would eventually be painted dirt actually be better injury wise than the synthetic stuff that they currently have?
Yeah, I'm not sure the players would love painted dirt, Clint, but there certainly is something here with the turf versus grass debate. Our company looks at this quite a bit at the predictors. We have a lot of data. We've dug pretty deep into this. We've seen it at the stadiums. You know, I'll tell you a story. When I was with the Patriots, it always, you know, these stadiums are multi-use facilities. They're amazing venues. And, you know, you'd have a big concert at Foxborough and you've got a massive amount of plywood, you've got plastic put down, you've got all these things put on the turf, and NFL representatives and team reps would go out after to make sure that the turf, you know, quote unquote, bounce back. And they have this thing called the Clegg test or a bounce ball and all these metal balls they put on it. And the measure basically the bounce back or the resiliency and how it comes pre and post on the turf. But, you know, the players always say, it's just not the same even after a concert. And, you know, the same is probably true of even grass if you put stuff over grass. But the beauty of grass is it just comes back more naturally. And the reality is there are probably some differences in grass versus turf. There's no question in my mind in terms of injuries.
Well, and we are seeing those injuries, and they seem to be taking place on that synthetic grass. But your group is studying these injuries. So what injuries are you seeing more of on the turf than on the natural grass?
Yeah, so it's not all of them. So as you would imagine, shoulder, elbow, wrist, those, you know, that's the same. There's not going to be any difference there. You have to keep in mind that about half of the stadiums are turf and half are grass. And of those turf stadiums, there are probably 10 to 12 different types of turf and turf companies. So there's a lot of variability and not a lot of consistency across the turf product, because there are a lot of different companies, a lot of different infills, types of turf, et cetera. So with that, you see a variety of different injuries in different stadiums. You know, obviously MetLife got a lot of exposure last year. They actually changed out their turf this year, but then Aaron Rodgers goes down at MetLife with his Achilles. Now, what's interesting, we didn't see a big difference in Achilles tears on turf versus grass, but where are there differences? A variety of ankle injuries and a variety of knee injuries, as well as hamstring. And if you really sort out the injuries that are really non-contact versus contact, or just take all comers, it, for us in our data, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. We were still seeing a higher incidence on turf of these injuries. And that would be validated by literature that's been published in the peer-reviewed sports journal and our really good sports journals that we review and look at. And data sort of mirrors that.
Okay, I've heard now that Aaron Rodgers underwent some different type of surgery on that Achilles. And we saw at the Jets-Chiefs game on Sunday night, he was already kind of walking a little bit. He looked pretty good, but that seemed really, really early to me. Is this new surgery possible? Is this just a sports rumor? What do we have going on here?
Yeah, he looked pretty good Sunday night, kicking that leg up there and hanging out in the box at the stadium. So yeah, what he had is, it's really interesting. You know, we do a lot of work in orthopedics to try to make whatever we're fixing stronger, better, so you can get back more efficiently, faster, safer, and have less re-injury. And one of the procedures that he has is called a suture bridge type of construct, and it uses a special type of screw in, a very robust anchor, as well as these thicker tape sutures, not round cylindrical sutures, but tape sutures in a bridge and compression construct. So you're not only, you know, the Achilles is pulling off the calcaneus, but it's also attached on a broad attachment on the calcaneus. And the key is to get that Achilles really well attached down to the calcaneus or your heel bone, which is the only attachment down in the foot. So you want to do this very robust attachment. And so it's called a speed bridge. The company that has helped pioneer this is called Arthrex. You use a very good tape suture. It has compression. You use a variety of biologics as well in your own PRP or stem cell or bone marrow aspirate. Those are all very important constituents. And then you also don't want the wound to have a problem. And we do sometimes see wounds after Achilles surgery. Why? Feel your skin back there. It's super thin, and sometimes you can get the wound dehisces, and that's a huge problem. So there's also some really cool dressings that also help with that, that are impregnated with, you know, especially antibiotics or other type of healing constituents. So he had, to my knowledge, really everything thrown at this. And I think that's a big reason why he's comfortable, is you get just a good solid repair. It repairs it anatomically that You do pretty well. And I don't know, maybe there's an outside chance he comes back. People are talking about it this season. I think it's going to be a stretch. He's 39, but he's also very strong and 100% focused on this over the next 3 months. So we'll see.
Well, and it's just so amazing. And you know more than anyone just how quickly, just in the last 20, 30 years, the improvements that we have seen, the surgeries that we have seen, they used to be season or even career ending. And now these players are coming back from these injuries. They're getting back out on the field ASAP, aren't they?
Yeah, no, they get back as quick as we can. I mean, there are still some that just take a while. And you know, you got to get the muscles back, the core back and everything. And it's so key when, you know, half a second matters to be able to have all of that optimized. And we see that all the time, especially when we're doing final testing, final return to play assessments, and dialing up those protocols so that they're completely optimized, because you don't want it to happen again, and you want to make sure that they're really ready to go when they come back. So the return to play assessments are super cool, and working really closely with the physical therapist, strength conditioning, the athletic trainers, many others as part of the whole team to get the athlete back at the highest level and at the safest level when they're truly ready is important.
We talked a little bit about the move to try to get rid of some of the synthetic turf in the league. Now we are seeing some players get behind it as well. Buffalo Bills pass rusher Von Miller. We see San Francisco 49ers tight end George Kittle. We saw David Bakhtiari. A number of players are getting involved. They are trying to get rid of that synthetic turf, and they are trying to get both players and fans to sign a petition where they would change that fake turf grass to natural grass. Hey, I understand it completely. They are trying to get those other 16 stadiums flipped from synthetic turf to natural grass. I just don't know if I'm going to believe that NFL owners are going to pay for it, because NFL owners don't like to pay for anything. They try to get the fans to buy their stadiums. Is this possible to get these owners to flip and spend this money?
Everything's possible in the NFL. I mean, the NFL has, you know, the capabilities to do this. I think some of it is just how it is truly executed. I mean, there are just some stadiums that are going to be hard to get grass in. Now, you look at what Arizona did. It's truly amazing, but that's Arizona climate. You know, they're sure able to grow the grass and the string out in the parking lot and then wheel it in on train track type wheels. It's unbelievable. And so to keep that grass absolutely beautiful, because there's, you know, there'd be no way in a dome stadium to be able to do something like that if you got a closed roof. So, you know, there's some stadiums that are going to be tough to do this, but I think at the end of the day, having a consistent product, grass, and one consistent product of turf would be something very nice for the league to have and at least start with for the stadiums that may not have the turf, because there are a bunch of different companies or a bunch of different kinds. And the three basic types of turf are, you got your basic monofilament, which is one sprig coming up and it kind of comes out like a little flower petals. You've got this hybrid turf, which has a mixture of grass and elements actually, and some turf elements. And then you've got another product called slit film. And slit film was introduced by these companies to be a very durable product. And it comes up as a sprig, but it also is a honeycomb mesh. And the reason the honeycomb mesh is good for the field, if you will, is it's very durable. The problem is it's a honeycomb mesh. Sure. And players feel that their cleats get caught in this honeycomb mesh slit film. And I found it very interesting that the NFL, when they retrofitted Tottenham in England for the NFL game overseas, that you got a beautiful grass pitch. Well, that would have been great to play on that, which they didn't. But it's a great video in terms of how they transformed the field and put in turf. But the turf product they put in was slit film. I'm like, oh, that's not one of the great ones we've seen. In fact, that's what MetLife had, was slit film before, and they just traded out this season. But you saw the rash of injuries that has occurred on slit film. And our data would also, you know, again, the predictors would show that slit film is a little bit worse than just even standard turf. So not all turfs are created equal, number one. Number two, it'd be nice to get a consistent product. Number three, I think, you know, Bakhtiari and others and the others that are talking about this are onto something. And I think NFL should continue to listen.
When we are talking about this synthetic turf and different types of turf that you mentioned, I've also heard rumors that those little balls on the turf, that they could be cancer causing. Is there any accuracy to that? Is this just more speculation? How accurate is that?
Yeah, Clint, super interesting. The infill is what it's called. And the infill can be anything from literally shredded up old tires, which, you know, goes into tires, oil and other sure, quote unquote carcinogens, if you will, if exposed to open wounds. And this really got perpetuated, especially in soccer goalies and some other ones that were playing on artificial turf, where the pellets would get into a open wound, into the skin. And, you know, we see it all the time. A player comes off and they got a whole bunch of stuff on their elbow and it's 100 tiny black little pellets in there that is the infill. And the science isn't there yet. I mean, there's certainly some stuff out there that people would suggest that, but the science is not there from what we've seen to be able to prove that conclusively that the infill is a problem. Now, what's interesting is the infill is consistently changing, and now there are these organic products, these more biologic type of products that are much more body friendly, I guess.
Okay, I've got to ask this question, Dr. Preventure. NFL teams are going to less preseason games. They're going to less preseason snaps. They're going to less preseason practice. We are seeing it at the college level as well. Major League Baseball pitchers, they are going on pitch counts. But are any of these things helping? Because the NHL doesn't seem to be doing this nearly as much as those other leagues are, and yet they seem to be doing better than most as far as injuries. I know they do get serious injuries as well, but is all of the limiting of practice, the limiting of playing time, is any of this actually helping at all?
Hard to say. I think the jury's still out. I will tell you, I think, you know, now with three games, less snaps, more protection, the thing we still see is the first 2 weeks are pretty wild in the NFL. There's a lot of injuries the first couple weeks, and there's, you know, potentially even more the first week one or week two, based on how you look at the data and how you look at what injuries are happening. And we've seen a little bit of uptick in injuries, especially week one and week two. It starts to level out week three, four, five, back to baseline about 5-6 years ago. But it's an interesting observation you have, Clint, because, you know, there's something about conditioning, getting used to the game, doing the reps, doing the practice versus, you know, protecting the body. So there's a tricky balance there, obviously, that's got to be met. You need enough to get the body conditioned, to know the game, to learn the offense, to learn the defense. But you also don't want to beat it up and bang it up ahead of time. But we are seeing a little bit of uptick in injuries the first couple weeks. It's pretty wild.
Well, and now with the preseason, the way that it is, and we see teams holding their guys out of preseason, some coaches don't have their starters play at all in the preseason. And so there's no wonder they're not used to these things. They haven't done these things nearly enough. And especially early on, we're seeing so many injuries because these players aren't used to the collision impacts yet. Yet with all the sports, the Navy SEAL things that you've worked with, Major League Baseball, you've worked with the NHL, you've worked with the NFL, college athletics, but you've also worked with snowboarders, with skiers. What would you say is the most physically challenging? Obviously, the Navy SEAL stuff is a completely different level. But what is the one that you see as the most physically challenging, the one that the best athletes are coming out of?
Oh, Clint, that's such a hard question. I mean, every sport has its own nuances in terms of what, you know, what's required to perform at the highest level. And I really don't care who you are, what it is. It's when you get into the top of the pyramid of the professionals, the ones that truly are, you know, beating the odds, beating the injury odds, performing day in, day out. You know, their DNA is just amazingly superior. And I don't know what it is. It's amazing when you see these athletes, and it's just their mental resiliency, their mental toughness, their combined with how their body's been programmed and function, you know, at all levels is amazing. So every sport has differences in order to perform. And these athletes at those levels don't cease to amaze me.
Oh, I bet. I'm totally sure of that. Because it's funny when you look at some of these athletes and people say, oh yeah, you know, maybe if things would have broke right for me, I could have been an athlete too at that level. No, you're not even in the same species. It's not even close. If you had to say though, who has the best athletes? You can tell us. We're not going to tell anybody. You can just tell us which sport has the best athletes.
Well, I mean, I was a rower, so I think the rowers are
the rowers for sure.
No, I'm kidding, but there is something to rowing in terms of just you know, stamina and precision and strength and cardio. But of course, I'm insanely biased. You know, the professional sports world, I can't even say it because they're all so different and amazingly talented at that level. And whether it's, you know, NBA, NFL, NHL, pro skier, snowboarder, going down a snowboard pipe at, you know, 42 degrees, whatever that is, and launching 16, 18 feet in the air. I mean, all of these are feats that in their own world are just continue to amaze me.
You're dealing with these athletes and you're dealing with these things. And I don't need specifics. I'm not trying to get you in trouble or anything, but just between us, what's the worst injury? What is the worst thing that you can actually tell us about that you've seen?
Yeah, there's some tough ones out there. I mean, obviously, you know, from when I was in the military, we took care of some very tough injuries, men and women that, you know, and really tough injuries that would get medevaced from overseas, from Iraq, from Afghanistan. And you know, they'd show up at Miramar Naval Air Station 2-3 days after the injury, well packaged up from whoever was deployed overseas, which, you know, was me at times or many times my colleagues that would, you know, do a great job taking care of them and providing what we call damage control orthopedics or trauma orthopedics care. And then, you know, they'd come back to us in San Diego or San Antonio or Bethesda, Maryland. And the three main facilities where we'd take care of these you know, wounded warriors. I mean, these heroes, American heroes. And you know, it was a great honor, but it was also significantly, you know, trying when you could see 18 to 23, 22 year olds or you name it with, you know, they have one leg now. They have one arm. They have no arms. They have no arms and one leg. It was really trying. And so with that, we really worked hard as a team to try to reconstruct what we could, preserve what we could, to do the best prosthetics, orthotics, everything else we could do for them to help them get back to their lives at the highest level. So that for me was an amazing story of heroism and sacrifice, and you know, return to trying to get them to return to their life. And so from just an injury standpoint, no question, that's absolutely the worst, most horrific things I've seen. And it was just a great privilege to try to work alongside a great team that helped, you know, had the opportunity to put these back together. I would say from the professional athlete side, you know, anytime you see a, you know, broken bone that's sticking through the skin, or, you know, a knee injury that rips not just three, but all four of the ligaments of the knee, plus a meniscus, plus cartilage damage, plus other things, those are all very hard. Seeing quite a few hip almost dislocations, or the hip joint dislocates on the field or subluxes on the field, then you end up with a fracture in your pelvis. You know, these are big injuries that are, you know, can be hard to come back from. And, you know, you're seeing it with Nick Chubb. He's got to have a stage surgery, or he had part one of his surgery where he had the MCL and meniscus, and he's going to go get his ACL fixed here probably in a few weeks. The reason that's staged is so you don't get as much stiffness in the knee and you get an optimal rehab. And doesn't really change the end timing of when he can come back, which would probably be 8, 9, 10 months for an injury like that. But he's already done it before. And so he's got incredible DNA, incredible resiliency for, you know, a guy like Nick Chubb to be able to get back on the field. And we'll see him next year. And, you know, fingers crossed, as long as everything goes well. So seen a lot of injuries throughout the time. We've had to come up with a lot of unique ways to treat these, from whether it was in the military and the blast wounds all the way to some of the professional athletes. We want to try to provide the best possible outcome for everyone.
Okay, so you've taken on this new kind of situation where now you have this job with Fox Sports. You kind of come in, you give your medical opinion, you give some ideas on what you might be seeing on the field. But that has to be hard, because you've got to be both medically accurate and yet also be sensitive to the public, sensitive to the people that could be watching. How difficult is that job for you to do in that regard?
It's incredible. It's a great opportunity. They do a great job. They've got an incredible broadcast production team, and they know how to put it together. They know how to put the message together. They've got a great crew. My producer's amazing, and so we're able to, you know, I think script it the right way, so it's respectful yet informative to the fan. And we have to be respectful to the player, you know, and their families and those that are watching the game. You know, it's injuries part of sport, and you know, we want to be able to provide information, but you know, first and foremost, we got to be respectful.
Yeah, definitely, because that's the line. And we all remember, well, some of us are old enough to remember, the announcer would look down and say, well, it has to be this. And I remember just sitting there thinking, why are you saying that? Like, you shouldn't be saying that already. We have no idea. I'm sure you're trying to avoid those situations. But let's talk a little bit about the predictors. The predictors are a group of data scientists and sports enthusiasts who develop cutting-edge algorithms to predict not just athletic performance, but also athletic injuries. And your work has been featured in a number of publications. You've worked with the top teams in the NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball. Tell me a little bit about what the predictors do kind of on a daily basis.
Yeah, Clint, it's an interesting story. So we actually started this whole concept when I was in the military, when we were working with the SEAL teams, and we call Navy Special Warfare Command. And we were looking at ways to enhance the human performance program and really provide the resources that the SEAL team guys needed to excel at all levels and excel at their job and wellness, injury prevention, everything else that was woven into it. They, you know, imagine back in the day that SEALs would never come in and do, they didn't want to come to medical. Why? Because I was the one that was going to take them out of their operation. Yeah, yeah. Last thing they wanted to do, me to take them out of the game. It's just like in the NFL, very similar. So I didn't, we had to switch the mindset by using information, by using where the injuries were, by using what we could do to optimize sleep, mental wellness, body condition and muscle condition and stretching and, basic stuff, nutrition. But putting this all together, back in the early 2000s was really kind of state of the art. Now, many of the teams are doing that. So we used a lot of data back then. This is really where the concept was born. I brought this to, the concepts to the Crafts and Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And we put together, I think, a really cool human performance program. We had quite a few elements there, especially a really good nutritionist who was amazing, an incredible athletic trainer. The head ATC was great. So we had a really good crew there that was already doing stuff. We just needed to bring in some more elements and then bring some data in. And I quickly realized Belichick was, he knows enough about medical. The guy's a photographic memory, I think. I'm convinced. But he was not going to learn medical speak like we know medical speak. So I had to learn coach speak a little bit better. And that's how we use the data to interpret medical, to coach speak a little bit better. And that's when I left the league full-time in late 2016, we were able to then start this. And I saw an opportunity to be able to arm fans with information and use the data that we had built from Navy Special Warfare and our battle-tested data there to then be able to use that in NFL and as well as other sports.
What is the most surprising data that you're getting? Is it the way that the injuries are taking place? Is there anything out there that you're looking at and saying, I don't know if I expected that going into it, but I'm learning some things the more research that we do?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of examples of that, Clint. There's, there are a lot of, in Fox Sports, we have a lot of experts in the room, but then the data speaks. So it's pretty interesting. Sure. You got a lot of people that can talk around the table. And there's a ton of people with amazing experience. But when you start looking at some of the data, there's a few mythbusters there. And so how do you perform after this injury? How do you do on this? How does the injury happen here? How does it happen? What can we do to make that player optimize better? How do we help the player with that? So there's a lot of follow-on data solutions that come out of this as well.
Okay, so when you're working with the predictors, is it just research? Are you working with specific groups or specific people? Can anyone be involved with the predictors? What is it that they do? And who do they work with?
Yeah, no, we have a whole company that is a group of fanatical sports and fans. And I have a team with 75 years of NFL experience on the sideline. Wow. So it's a pretty cool group where we're, talking every day, working every day, all the time to be able to put together what happens every Sunday.
Is it just NFL? Do you work with any other sports or can anyone reach out and be involved with that group?
Yeah, no, we're always looking for people that want to be involved. And, I call it a coalition of the willing that, love sports and love to interpret this stuff and be involved at a high level. And then we got a great data analytics team to help interpret what our experts around the room know. So we're doing a number of other sports, NBA, NHL, baseball, soccer, et cetera. So it's a cool engine we've built, if you will.
Yeah, you know, we spoke a little bit before about your athletic history as far as rowing and that kind of thing. How much involvement does your group have with those Olympic sports as well?
Yes, we do quite a bit here. You know, the Stedman Clinic where I'm based has a USOC relationship. So we have the opportunity to treat a lot of our Olympic athletes here, which is a great privilege. A lot of my partners do that as well, along with myself. So it's a really great privilege to do that. And we're also, you know, doing a lot of data analytics in that realm, and you know, in Colorado Springs, working closely with that group to really optimize Olympic performance. And that's a great group of athletes, I'll tell you. Sure. Really amazing.
Well, and the work that they do down there, the kids that they have down there, we've been down there a few times, visited the Olympic Center, and to see some of the athletes that they have down there, I mean, maybe they're not the people that are going to be getting those million-dollar contracts or whatever, but they are no less amazing as far as the athletic story, as far as the drive, as far as the determination and the performance to be able to do the things they do at such a crazy high level.
Yeah, Clint, you know, some of my favorite stories are even in the Paralympic athletes, I just absolutely amazing. They do a great job. The team in Colorado Springs and in San Diego and the other USOC training centers around specific to the sport it's amazing stories. And we get injured Paralympic athletes here as well in Vail. And it's a great privilege and honor to take care of athletes at all levels. And there's some just great stories, and being able to get them back to their level of competition is really humbling.
You know, we talked a little bit about the NFL, and I don't want to go too far down this path because we've covered some NFL stuff already. And I know that you're more involved with the orthopedic stuff, but we're also looking at the head injuries. When we're looking at turf versus grass, does that play a role in the head injuries as well?
Possibly. You know, it's a little hard in that realm to truly tease that out, you know, because it's not all turf, and it's, you know, probably a minority is actually, you know, on less than 50% on the ground versus helmet to helmet or other type of injury.
Okay. And that's what I wondered, if there was any correlation at all.
It's you know, you think, you know, you see these injuries that the helmet, the quarterback, who's a classic one, goes back, is sacked, helmet bounces off the back of the turf. Would it be different on grass or is it about the grass? You know, it's hard to say. What I can tell you is after brain rest and after going through the 5-step NFL concussion protocol, which, you know, to be honest, the concussion protocol has really evolved. The NFL, I think, has done a great job. You know, kudos to them for really taking I think the lead in all professional sports. Again, we deal with a lot of professional athletes, a lot of different sports, but the NFL has taken the lead in this from many other contact sports. And I think other sports leagues are continuing to follow this. And you know, our 5-step protocol has been in place for a long time, but there are just other ways that are better to be able to recognize it, with the ability to have the spotter, the eye in the sky, a couple of athletic trainers that are the unaffiliated neurologic consultants that are two on each sideline, and you know, making those decisions not just from a quick assessment, but also really good data, pre-brain data, post-brain data, all these types of things, where we have really good exams to be able to see how the athlete's progressing and progress through a very good 5-step protocol. And so my hat's off to the NFL for doing a really good job with this. It's not perfect, but again, with a contact sport, it's probably never going to be perfect, but it's so much better than it used to be.
Oh, by far. And I mean, things just have changed so much, even in our lifetime. It just seems like it's getting better now. We're now seeing the shells going on the helmets. They're saying those could be coming permanently. They might be a little more safe. I don't know how it's going to look, but
That data from preseason was maybe about 8 to 10% difference in concussion. So, you know, that's a real number, especially in preseason. And you know, the average games missed after concussion is several games. It's not it's not just zero. It's not one. It's more than one. So, and it's time to get to protocol. And we know that brain rest is important.
Sure. Okay. I've got to ask you what might be the most important question that I'm going to ask on this podcast today. Is the biggest one. I know you're a East Coast guy. I know you grew up on that East Coast. I know where you're from and everything, and you grew up with those Boston teams. But I mean, you live in Colorado. So who are you rooting for? Which teams are you cheering for now?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up in New Hampshire, and I was a very beat up New England fan for a long time. You have to imagine we Patriots went to one playoff game before Kraft's bought them.
And you got and robbed in that playoff game.
Yep, exactly. Went to one. And that was it. One and done and out.
Yeah.
The Red Sox, really long time. Ooh. Really, really long, rough years. The Bruins, were okay. So, you know, when I was there, it was a good time to be there, being a New England fan at heart. And I probably have my parents to blame for that, like many of us do, that, you know, we just watch the games and listen to all the radio announcers and for baseball and everything. And it was, those were great, you know, family times, listen to it, no matter how bad, the team was. So I'm a New England fan at heart, Clint. Okay. I'm sorry. It's just,
no, that's all right.
Just the way it is. But, you know, teams like teams like out here, teams, the Broncos, the Chargers, I spent a ton of time in San Diego and I was so bummed. And my kids were so bummed when they left San Diego. Yeah. And, so now we got a number of allegiances.
Well, and I'm going to give you some credit because you've actually gone through the difficult times with the Patriots. I'm old enough to remember those days when you were hard luck. You had Steve Grogan, those kind of teams. And so the people that are like, well, the only quarterback I ever remember is Tom Brady. Okay. But you haven't dealt with pain. You don't understand heartache and those kind of things. It's funny because I was actually out in San Diego just a couple of years ago. And the guy was driving me to the airport and he was listening to sports talk radio. And I asked him, you know, so who's your team? And he said, well, I'm a Chargers fan. And he said, well, who's your team? And I said, well, I'm a Broncos fan. And he goes, oh man. And I go, I know we're pretty bad right now. And he goes, no. You don't get a complaint. You have three Super Bowls. You keep your mouth shut. I was like, yeah, no, that's fair.
It's all relative. And then, you know, then you get spoiled, you know, because it's one parade after another in Boston. But you know what's amazing is the parity in the league and how it comes full circle, you know, every 7, 10, 12 years for these teams. And draft picks matter and the draft matters. And it's truly amazing when you look at how teams can come and go over the years. It's really, really hard to sustain. That's one thing I did see is, you know, when you're consistently in the playoffs and consistently deep in the playoffs, that takes its toll on a team. And you look at NBA, you look at NHL, those are long seasons if you're in the playoffs. NFL, it's long as well. And if you're going to February, that's completely different than, you know, December 31st.
Sure, sure.
It's long and it takes its toll. And then the offseason, then you got OTAs starting in April, and then you've got you know, June for mini camps. You got, I mean, all this other, it comes really fast, and the body needs recovery and rest.
Well, and I'm always fascinated just by the expectations in the world of football. You come into the college or NFL season, you know, we're not very far in right now. We're maybe a month in, but some of the teams, you can tell they were coming in and they were expecting really, really big things. And then they struggle a week or two and you see that confidence drop. You see that team starts to struggle. And for Bill Belichick, and I know we can debate whether or not he's the greatest of all time, but the way he kept finding a way to getting his team back up to that level, it's unbelievable. It is truly amazing. I know now there's like a Belichick Brady war, who's better, whatever. My feeling is they were both just really, really good together.
Yeah, no question. They, you know, that was a special time on the team, Clint, and had it built up. But it's you know, the coaches are amazing. And Belichick always says it's a player's game. It's a player's game at the end of the day. The coaches help execute the plan, keep things organized, get them to the meetings, do the right drills, do the right plays. It's a player's game. And so my hat's off to the players and coaches in the league that do this day in, day out, because it is a grind and it's a long day and the coaches are there. The medical staffs are there a very long time, and you're talking 18, 20, 22-hour days. I mean, it's insane.
You bring up a really good point, because the ability of these athletes to do the things that they do, and you think back to a guy like Jerry Rice, maybe wasn't the fastest, maybe wasn't the biggest, but what he did, because of his heart, because of his desire, you compare that to a guy, say like a Jerry Porter, who is bigger, stronger, faster, had all of the measurables, everything you would want to see at the combine, and you go, why is one so much better than the other? Hey, some of it is a little bit of luck. Some of it is you ended up in the right place at the right time with the right staff and the right teammates. And some of it is one guy is not going to be denied no matter what. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, no, the grind is amazing to me. It's the NFL, you know, the behind the scenes, you know, you see a little bit of it on Hard Knocks. You get a few of these inside views of what goes on day to day, but you really don't see the hours. And, you know, getting on a plane in Kansas City on Sunday night or Monday night and going back to Providence where we would fly out, you know, it's getting done the game around, I don't know, what, a midnight East Coast, 11:30 East Coast. You get on the plane and an hour and a half later is usually when we're on the plane and wheels up, hour and a half, 2 hours after the game. You're landing at 4:35 in the morning, maybe a couple hours of sleep. The coach, you know, I would try to go to sleep, do a few things with the coaches. They're already on the iPads. The IT team is handing out the iPads from video review and getting ready for the next week. So they're up on the plane for the most part, and then they go right to the stadium 5:30, 6 in the morning and start the grind again. It's absolutely amazing what goes behind the scenes to put these games on.
So you're on that plane. How many injuries are you treating on the plane? Are you scurrying around getting this guy's leg elevated or something?
We got a great medical staff and the head ATC and the therapist and interns are helping a ton. But, you know, you're icing down some sore joints and things like that. And that's it's a team effort. What we do is those, as soon as you get back, we're already doing some injury rechecks at 5:30 in the morning. You did a little bit in the locker room. Okay, let it settle out, see where things go. You know, let's get on the plane. And then, you know, 5:30, 6 in the morning, doing injury rechecks. Monday afternoon, if that's Monday morning at 5:30, 6 in the morning, I'll come back Monday afternoon. We'll do some more injury rechecks at 1, 2, 3 o'clock or something like that. So it's, we just got to get things organized and get them, you know, treated at the highest level. You got to do it.
Very, very interesting and fascinating to me to kind of take a look behind that curtain, see what's going on there. Hey, I want to say thank you to Dr. Matt Preventure and the work that the predictors are doing out in the athletic and medical fields. It is truly, truly amazing stuff. I want to thank you so much for coming into the Daily Dose. So how would a coach or a player or someone get involved with the predictors?
Yeah, just reach out to us, thepredictors.com. We got some contact info there, and please just reach out to us.
Hey, again, I want to say thank you so much for your time. I know we had to do a little rescheduling and shuffling around, but I want to say thank you. I really, really appreciate you coming in. Some fascinating, some really interesting stuff that sports fans are going to be very interested to hear.
Clint, awesome. You got a great great show and great energy. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much. And thanks to be here. It's a great honor.
Hey, next week on The Dose, we are chasing one guest. But either way, we're going to be covering all that is going on in the world of sports. We're going to be covering pro and college football. And of course, the Major League Baseball playoffs are underway. So be sure you stop by the Daily Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to Dr. Matt Preventure for stopping by and spending some time with the Daily Dose. You know, you are doing some really interesting and important work in the world of sports and in sports medicine. The work that you and the predictors are doing is absolutely incredible, and you are more than welcome to come by the Dose anytime. But I also want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the email. Thank you for the text. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.